Hey everybody, yes, welcome back to the Paid Search Podcast. My name is Jason Rothman, as always, including recording this on Christmas Eve. I'm joined by the great Chris Schaefer. Chris, how many times did you dress up like Santa this season?
Zero.
Okay, that's not your role?
No.
Are you starting, like, maybe somewhere in the last 11 and a half months starting to get requests for that? I'm not asking for any specific reason, but...
Another comment about me being fat. That's great. I appreciate that.
trying to get you fired up here, Chris.
No, it's no.
Well, that was a bit of a
ho ho. Yeah. No. I'm not a big Santa pusher. That's more on the wife. So
okay.
What about you?
Whoa.
Have you broken the...
That felt aggressive. No one's asking me to dress up like Santa. Hey, Chris, what's going on with your watch? Is that an Apple Watch?
Mm-hmm.
Can you hold that up for me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's okay. What are you doing with that? What are you doing with that band?
It's just a different band.
Is that a real, like, old school metal band, like from a regular watch?
No.
Band?
You can buy metal bands that look like old school, but they fit on an Apple Watch.
And you think that looks good?
Well, up until 5 seconds ago, I did.
Honestly, has your wife seen that yet?
Yeah, it looks great.
Is she okay with it? She didn't mention anything.
Okay. Yeah,
a gift from someone?
It doesn't. No, I've had it for a couple of years. I haven't worked out, so I changed over to my non-workout band, which is a little more, you know, flashy.
Are you going back?
That's
to working
me.
Out.
Why? Do I need to?
No, it's just a man changes his band on his Apple Watch. That could mean something for the long term here.
No, yeah, yeah.
And then all this talk about, oh, I'm taking the last week of December off. Don't talk to me. Don't ask me to do anything. I'm taking this week off. I didn't know if you were taking it off from, like, working out as well.
Or, Oh, yeah.
Just a pure relaxation.
Just, yeah, yeah. I've been doing a lot of traveling, seeing different family during Christmas here, and no working out. I'm going up the scale, right? You know, I'm approaching the crest.
You're going up on the scale,
right? Going up on the scale, approaching the crest.
You're the one saying it, not
before
me.
Before the roller coaster takes a dive and starts coming back down. You know, that's my life. Is my health condition is always a roller coaster. It goes up and down.
No. Well, to pay you a compliment, you keep it in a nice range, though, and we all appreciate that.
Well, thank you. That's what they're here for.
So, Chris, I think this is, let me look at the calendar here. God, this year will not end. Last year, you were talking about, or last episode, you were talking about, like, year-end stuff. This episode, we're doing, like, what worked awesome for us in Google Ads in 2021.
This
I was going to tell you this is going to be it for the year. No.
Well, as far as the listeners, it is. On there.
For the listeners, that's true. Good point. It's just for us. We're going to be recording this in the final days of 2021 next week.
This is the last one for them. They're going to be back at work.
Good point.
And this will be it. Saying goodbye to 2021. Reviewing what worked awesome in Google Ads in 2021. Some of the wins, as you said, which I like that idea. A positive spin on... how things have changed in Google Ads, how things are different, and, you know, what wins we pulled and what strategies brought those about. I like that. It's a good topic.
Yeah, I wanted to end the year on some positivity. There's so many changes that we've all dealt with in the last couple of years in Google Ads and in everything. I honestly feel like a fighter who's just been through some storms here in Google Ads the last few years, and I feel stronger for it because we've survived it. And there's still a lot of good stuff going on in Google Ads, but I'm definitely using the platform a lot differently than I had been for years, and it's taken some time to get used to that. So today we are going to, oh, Chris, I see something in front of my eyes. I can't stop. I can't not talk about it. I have one of those focus things, I guess, but search news blank once again. The boogeyman is out there, Chris. It's been awful quiet on the news front. The news desk has been left empty for months and months and months.
Yeah.
There will be news coming. I have a feeling.
If there was news on the week of Christmas, it it would be the worst news. You know how, like, you know,
they bury it.
The yeah. White House Friday will afternoon. Like, drop like some really bad news on Friday afternoon. You know, yeah. that's so, yeah, that's what Google would do. And luckily, there's no news. So manual bids are still around. You know, this is the time they would kill manual bids. They'd be like, hey guys, manual bids are out. Merry Christmas. You guys have a happy new year.
I felt bad about my joke last week when I said something to the effect of the conversion column, well, it's still there.
Mm.
I didn't like that I planted that seed that's out in the universe now because I do use that column. But yeah, search news once again blank. But
that's good.
That will probably change here soon.
Yeah.
But yeah, Chris, we're just going to end it on some positive notes. We're going to give a little bit of numbers with some data here. Talk about things that we're doing that we're really liking and getting success with in good old Google Ads. And we'll be doing that here on today's episode.
Yeah. Well, before we jump in, let me remind you guys how you can ring in the new year with some numbers in the green. You want to see some things explode, get better, perform better without just breaking the bank. You know how you don't break the bank? You pay nothing. That's what the price is for Optio. Optio is the software that can help you accelerate and grow your Google Ads success across multiple campaigns, multiple accounts. For agencies out there who are managing multiple accounts, this is for you. For business owners who are managing their own account and don't have as much time as they'd like, they wear multiple hats, this is the tool for you. It is the tool to help you streamline your management. It brings the red flags to you and shows you what things need to be addressed. So if you need somebody looking over your shoulder saying, hey, did you notice that? Right? We're talking email alerts. We're talking pop-ups in the interface where you can log into Optio and see these things. Wonderful tool. You're going to like it and you can try it for free in the link in our description. That's optio.com/PSP. You can get an 8-week free trial to try this for the first 2 months of the new year. You can start off the right way with a free trial for Optio for 8 weeks at optio.com/PSP.
Okay, Chris, so let's get into it. Stuff that's working well for us, stuff that's connecting with a lot of clients out there. One thing for 2021 that I've been focusing on more in my verbal communication with consulting clients and clients, and just in my own way, I look at Google Ads. Give credit to the great Chris Schaefer. You are the one who introduced the sales funnel to the Google Ads universe here, in my universe here on the show. And you introduced that a couple of years ago, and I've just been using that more and more. And becoming fluent in the funnel language on Google Ads has really, really clicked with people I've been talking to about Google Ads, and just in my own way, I've been managing accounts. It clarifies everything when you're looking at these keywords and search terms. So why don't you kind of give us a little recap of the sales funnel? And then there's one specific example I want to break down that's getting a 24 freaking percent conversion rate.
1 in 4. I mean, that's approaching like dentist approval at that point. You know, I mean, that's amazing. So, okay. The sales funnel is really, it's not anything that you're ever going to see in Google Ads. There is no sales funnel button. There is no indication. There's no color coordination for sales funnel. You'll never see it. It's basically a theory. And if you have a keyword that is, plumbers are usually really easy because everybody's dealt with it. You say, my toilet's broken, right? That's the very top of the sales funnel, probably the least valuable search because the person has not determined that they're interested in qualified
in a plumber in a services. Plumber.
Yeah. You know, they have a problem, right? That's a symptom. Then we move a little bit further down. They say, plumbers near me. Okay. Now we're getting, okay, that's a qualified. We move down into this funnel. If you can imagine, the funnel gets thinner, right? Or the amount of space reduces because there's less searches of plumbers near me than there is something about something being broken. There's a lot more of those. So we've gotten less searches, a little bit more expensive. Then we move down to the very bottom and it says plumbers in Plano, Texas to fix a sink, a broken pipe, something like that. You know, very specific, typically longer number of words, and it gets very precise. There's less and less traffic of that and it's more expensive.
Emergency plumbers in Plano.
There you go. Perfect. Yeah. Very specific. And it's typically going to be very expensive.
Chris, speaking of being specific, what kind of toilet damage did you do in Plano? Did you, every time you think of plumbing, you bring up Plano as the example. Do you ever live there or something?
No.
Do like a 12-month lease on an apartment or something?
Yeah, that's a good point. We picked Plano as our example city, like, what, 3 years ago when we did our...
And we still... Yeah, that's a good point. We still do it.
That's what we did.
Well, when we talk about plumbing.
Yeah, so that was it. So I just stick with that. But
a lot of people get value out of the show, but I swear, if you're a plumber in Plano and you're trying
you are the winner. you're like these guys. You should just send us a check as much as we do. But yeah, that's the sales funnel is that. And here's the one thing that I always like to remind people when I talk about the sales funnel: you do not always assume that the person only has one opportunity to click on your ad. A person can enter the sales funnel multiple times at different points. So don't think that you're going to miss someone if you don't go after the top of the sales funnel. They will slowly qualify themselves. Sometimes you only aim for the very, very bottom because that's what you can afford. Different people can afford different levels of the funnel and certain amounts of it, but people will eventually qualify themselves. And if they never do, then that means they never were interested in that plumber in Plano to help them with the project. They were just looking up information about a toilet. It was never something they were truly interested in because they stopped doing the searches. So that's important to note. So there's my attempt at a very brief.
The funnel is so interesting because sometimes you want to go for the bottom of the funnel where they're ready to buy. And you said sometimes people just go for that because that's all they can afford. But the sales funnel is so interesting because sometimes people can't afford to pay a high cost per click for that most valuable traffic, mm-hmm. and they have to target the medium and high funnel stuff that's they can get some volume with a lower cost per click bid. So it's very interesting, and just like I'm trying to speak more and more Spanish, I speak quite a bit of it. I'm also thinking about the funnel specifically with Google Ads as its own language, and there's a very interesting thing like where if you look at the search terms that you get, and then you kind of place those search terms into the funnel, and you're all kind of just doing this in your head at once. But once it becomes intuitive, you can kind of look at those search terms for that specific industry and area, put those into the funnel, and then you can almost picture the user doing that search or picture the level of intensity with which they match up wanting your advertiser service or product. And you can kind of become fluent in the sense that you translate Google Ads search terms into positions in the funnel and into actual search users, and you can decipher their intent levels. And I was trying to explain that to someone I was training the other day, and this doesn't work in every industry like this well. I would assume in a lot it works great, but in their particular industry, search terms that included the word near me, obviously, that's going to work in a lot of industries, but for their specific industry, it worked like crazy well, and we just stumbled upon it because what I was trying to do is I was trying to show them the difference between medium and high funnel searches and then the deepest part of the funnel, which I considered to be a lot of the near me searches, and I wanted to show them that difference, hoping that the near me stuff would show better conversions than the medium funnel stuff to kind of back up my point or my hunch that this traffic's probably closer or more of that traffic on a percentage basis is ready to buy and will convert into calling you and filling out your form. Overall, without the word near me, the search terms were a 6% conversion rate. With the word near me, they were a 24% conversion rate. And that didn't even include phone calls in this case, the, I don't know, 1% to 5% on the conversion rate thing that was coming in from phone calls wasn't showing up there because the tracking wasn't correct. But just on lead forms, you're getting one out of every four clicks to fill out a lead form.
Wow.
Forget about the phone calls or not. That's like really, really, really strong traffic. And it kind of showed how powerful understanding the funnel can be in a real account, because then that person can go bid on those near me keywords, look at their positions on them, bid them high, and kind of know what they were paying for. And by the way, they were getting a 12x return conversion value profit versus the cost. So that told me like, hey, you should bid more. But The funnel, I mean, to me, 2021, Chris, if I thought about one of the most important things I've been doing this year, getting good results, how I do it, understanding that funnel and knowing why you're doing different things in the funnel at different times has been like my number one thing, especially as things have gotten so different with the search terms and keywords.
Yeah. Well, I want to hear another win here, but one thing I wanted to tack on to this is the reason, just to solidify exactly what Jason's talking about, the reason near me is lower in the funnel. And this may seem obvious, but let me crystallize it for you. When they say near me, immediately it eliminates the fact that it's a symptom search, or that it's a product search, right? If someone's looking for a product to fix their toilet, they're not going to say near me unless they include the product name itself, right? So it implies service. It implies a professional. It implies someone who can provide that in their home or their business or their office or whatever. So when you realize what these words, when you stop seeing the words and you start seeing what the implication of what it means in the funnel, that's when you're going to get to the point that Jason's talking about where you become fluent in that funnel language.
Definitely. So what's interesting, and why did it become the words near me? Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what some people decide to search. Maybe that's the way Google just built it with the suggestions or what they found. Who knows? But that's the way the internet search kind of developed here. Chris, I had never done the search near me and hit enter on its own.
Oh, wow. Near just near me, nothing.
Yeah, why don't you do that on your side? So what I've got is I've got what came up was map results, and two of the three are two different tattoo shops, and then the middle one is bed bug and pest control. So
yeah,
comes up on your side?
I've got ERs. I've got two different ERs and a vape shop. In the maps. So yeah, and I use satellite internet. So
I really hope this doesn't speak to the location I'm in, and like someone in some part of Boston with all the universities, things come up like libraries and coffee shops. But here, so the other funny thing, Chris, type in near me on your search bar and then hit space so you get suggestions.
Oh boy.
And this kind of breaks down 2021 in a nutshell here, and 2020 for that matter. Near me food, near me restaurants.
I have Walmart.
Near me now. I don't want to know
near me what now. That
urgent search is. Near me Indian restaurant, near me Walmart, near me COVID testing, near me gas station, near me open. Just looking for a little connection there.
Near me open.
Near me liquor store, near me Bank of America. So
I had all of those, except I had a couple more. I had a gas station, park.
Yeah, I've got that.
Starbucks.
I like the park. I like Starbucks.
Yeah. So that's funny. That's what
the people are looking for, Chris. They're looking for some food, some liquor.
There is
an ATM.
Wealth of knowledge in those Google suggestions. That's always interesting.
Yep. Okay. So, interesting word there, near me. So, Chris, another thing I've been doing a lot differently this year versus previous years, and I'm just going to make sure I get the right column here. For the first time in my career, I've been using the cost per conversion, conversion value over cost column, also called the conversion value per cost column. Takes your value of your conversions. To get that, you have to actually put in a conversion value when you make a conversion. And then it takes the amount of conversions multiplied by that conversion value. That's the top number. It divides that by your cost, and it kind of gives you your return on ad spend, if you will. Chris, you know the nerds are going to jump on me, but it's okay because they're just nerds and I can push them off. We all do Google Ads differently. And I had just been in a flow for multiple years where, yes, of course, I had conversion column, I had cost per conversion, and I had conversion rate. But because so much was search term focused and you were able to control the search term so tightly, in a lot of cases, just getting great search terms and focusing on the cost per click was good enough, especially for the many, many small businesses that were having trouble getting conversion tracking in place. Got the job done. For me, things changed this year with the, obviously, phrase match, exact match had just gotten a little looser over time, but the big difference was when they combined phrase match and broad match modified.
Yeah.
After making broad match modified a little smaller, now it's called updated phrase match. A lot of different search terms are coming in. I think they're coming in for different reasons. I don't necessarily want to block stuff just because I see a search term I don't like. I'm very, very focused on conversion data these days. Because of that, I'm diving in more to the conversion data we have. And I found the conversion value over cost, the return on ad spend, to be something I've been using a lot more. And as we're flying a plane here, that we're taking instruments off our pilots panel here, and we're losing some data sometimes when we're losing control. I like putting in something else that gives me a sense of control. That ROAS column, conversion value over cost, it's been guiding me a lot when we do get conversion tracking in place fully. You've been using that? Does that make sense? Putting too much value on it, or do you think it really is a gem of a column?
I don't think you should beat yourself up that much, because I know you're not an e-commerce guy. You don't manage e-commerce. You don't do Google Shopping, stuff like that. And it's really easy to not use conversion value over cost column when you don't. Yeah, on service companies, because very few service companies will have true value of a service determined. They won't know how much a phone call is worth or how much a, you know, this or that is worth. So I'm not surprised. I definitely encourage anyone who is like Jason and does not use it very often and wants to try and take their game up to a new level. Absolutely. If you're e-commerce and you're not using it, shame on you. It's absolutely a standard for e-commerce or anybody who has any type of revenue generating per conversion type of system. You know, if somebody purchases and that's always worth a certain flat revenue, then you should be able to determine how much Google Ads is providing you in profits simply by tracking the revenue over cost or value over cost in this case. So yeah, I'm not surprised. It's very easy to skip over, but no matter whether you're in e-com or in service, it is absolutely the gold standard to bring your management to the next level, because you determine, you stop asking what brought me the most leads, and instead you start asking what brought me the most profit.
Value, profit.
Yeah. That's an important question.
It's very powerful, Chris. And the problem with this column is, and if you're not accurate on your conversion value that you assign your conversions, you have a problem, because you're not going to get accurate data. Alternatively, if you don't have all conversion tracking in place, you're not going to get good data there. And I was just looking at one of my own campaigns for myself before the show, looking at my conversion value over cost column, and I looked at it. I was like, you know what? I thought I've been doing better than this. So what's the deal? And this is how crazy things are, Chris. I have a thank you page when someone fills out a form. On that thank you page, I put Google Ads conversion code, and that's how I track filled out a form conversion. Mm-hmm. So someone saw the thank you page. That worked for years and years. I don't know what happened. But I looked at a different way I track forms, and I was like, wait, I'm getting more forms that are showing up in Google Ads from Google Ads. What's going on? I looked at my page code. The global tag and the conversion code was not on my thank you page.
Oh, wow.
And I don't remember changing it. So I don't know if it was like some kind of website backup or
who knows.
But it's just crazy how that stuff happens a lot. And so If you just have to be careful with this column, because if it's one of those binary things, if you're confident in your conversion value judgment and you're confident in that all your conversion tracking is in place and it's all working properly, then you put 100% stock and belief into that column. Mm. But at the same time, if you have any doubt that anything is not tracking properly, or you're not putting the right value on the conversion, or you're getting conversions other ways you're not tracking, then you can't really put full faith in that column, and it doesn't become as useful like at all, because you know it's not an accurate number. So very powerful when all the pieces are in place, but it takes a lot of collaboration from both the Google Ads person, the website person, and the business owner to come up with the value of the conversions to get it in place. Let me run this by you. I love remarketing, and a lot of my remarketing campaigns over 30-day stretches, maybe over 6 months to a year, I get one or two conversions sneak in and I get some nice ROAS numbers. Mm-hmm. But at any point in time over a 30-day period, I could have a 0.0 conversion value over cost, zero return ROAS, but I still love remarketing. Is that valid?
Oh, if there's any argument I get to get into the most with my clients is why I still want them to spend money on a zero, at least what's on paper or on the screen, zero profitability campaign. I mean, I would say 99% of the remarketing campaigns that I run show zero value. Very few of them have conversion data within the past week, 2 weeks, you know, or month. And it is absolutely still relevant. So yeah, that's a good point where, you know, using conversion data religiously can get you in trouble because you can make dumb decisions because sometimes conversion data is trumped by just the value of branding and awareness, like when it comes to remarketing.
Yeah, and as we're speaking of things that like what worked in Google Ads, one of the most interesting things is when I talk to people who work at agencies and are not new to Google Ads, but maybe have been doing it for like a couple years versus you and I who are going on like maybe close to 30 years combined at this point. It's getting up there. A lot of what we do is more like if someone showed us a Google Ads account and said, "Is it good?" We would be like, "I'm not going to answer that question." Like, there's a whole lot more I need to know. And we would start then asking questions where a lot of people who are like 2 years in that are kind of like, you know, getting slapped on the back of the head by their boss at the agency, they're very focused on the numbers, like get cost per click down, get cost per conversion down, get conversion column up. And there's not so much thinking about like, well, what are those conversions? What are those keywords and searches and where do they come in the funnel that are going to get your cost per click down? And are they even valuable? And so I think that's when you go from knowledgeable to great is when you can remove yourself from just the numbers that you see and kind of think deeper and what makes up those numbers. So in terms of what's working and how to get good results at Google Ads, that's stuff we've had to do all year long is not take numbers at face value and dig into them and always think about is this thing actually working? So Chris, after the break, we're going to be giving an example of what I'm going to call the perfect account. I'm going to show you a screenshot of a campaign page. And I would say, yeah, there's some things that could be missing. But to me, it was an example of a perfect account. I was doing a year-end review for a client. And then we're going to talk about our biggest question mark and concern for 2022. And we have the same concern.
Yeah.
And so we'll talk about that. But before the break, I just want to highlight a couple columns here that I was down on when they first showed up a couple years ago, but now that I'm very high on them. Impression absolute top percentage and impression top percentage. These are not impression share columns. There's one impression share columns that are very similar to these, but I'm talking specifically impression absolute top percentage and impression top percentage.
The only position metrics in the performance columns.
When you click on column, modify columns, performance. And then we've got an impression absolute top percentage and impression top percentage.
Yeah.
Impression absolute top percentage of the times your ad showed, what percent of the time did you show up in the absolute number one position? Impression top percentage of the times your ad showed, what percent of the time did you show up in that top block in Google search results above organic, but anywhere between position one and position four, just somewhere at the top. And Chris, when we lost average position where it would give us like 1.1, 2.3.
Yeah.
And then it would give us positions at the bottom of the page, 6 and 7 and stuff. It was a hard change for both of us to digest because we had gotten so good at using that one position column to make decisions. If I had to choose now, I would choose these two new columns over the old average position because I love them so much. We'll talk about why, but are you also very positive on these columns now, or do you still miss your average position column?
It's a good question, and I think I agree with you. I think I prefer the percentage more so than the decimal 1.3, 1.1.
And I like that they break it down in between number one and at the top. At the beginning, it was very kind of confusing to figure out how you would use that data, but now it's so clear to me. Like, if you like your cost per conversion and you want to raise your bid or you want to get more and your ad rank, What I was telling you before the show, how do I use the search impression columns with them? That's something I've been doing a lot this year for a win as well. I use the search impression share, lost due to rank, search impression share, lost due to budget. I interplay those with the two position columns because say your impression absolute top percentage is like 15% and your search lost impression share due to rank is 72%. And your return on ad spend, conversion value over cost, is like 7 or 8. Well, what that's telling me is like, hey, I'm loving my cost per conversion. I'm loving my return on this ad spend. I'd be happy with a 4 or 5. I just want to pay more and get more. If I raise my bids, is it actually going to do something for me? Am I just going to pay more and get the same volume? Or am I going to pay more and get slightly less profitable conversions, but I'm going to get a whole lot more of them?
Yeah.
Well, you can confirm that with the absolute top percentage being at 15%. You're like, yeah, I can show up number one a whole lot more of the time, 85% more of the time. And then is there actually room to do that? Search loss due to rank. Yeah, I can show up more as well. And it's also confirming that I'm maybe bidding a little bit too low when that number's so high at 72%. So I use those interchangeably. Let me ask you this. Is there ever a search campaign ever where you don't put in impression absolute top percentage and impression top percentage position columns ever? Or are they always, do you ever run search without those two columns?
Oh, without looking at them?
Without having them as your columns in there?
Well, no, because I always have the same columns for everything. But
so they're fundamental.
But I would say there are times when they don't matter, which would be when I'm running a super broad, like a broad match, you know, low
national.
Yeah. Like some kind of
high volume,
some kind of thing that's just supposed to just kind of fish around and find some clicks. But, you know, that's a completely different beast anyway. So yeah. And in reality, if you're trying to generate, you know, leads, qualified traffic, there's never a situation when they don't matter. Absolutely.
Yeah. So been using those columns a lot. So Chris, we're going to take, For the listeners, our last dance party of the year break, and then we'll be back to talk about the perfect account and our biggest worry or concern for 2022, other than does my podcast partner still love me? Is the flame still burning? Do you love me, Chris?
Let's dance.
Can you say it? Can you say it, Chris?
Just dance. Don't talk.
Can you say I love you?
Just dance, Jason. Don't talk.
You can't say it.
Let's dance. OPTEO.com/PSP is the place to be. It's 2021, almost 2022, and if you want to be you and me want to be me, you got to go and be where it want to be. Optio is the place to be. That's all I can do. That's as far as it went. That's the end of my rapping career for this year. Thank you for attending. But if you want to try out the greatest Google Ads management tool in this universe, Optio is what you should try out. And if none of these arguments and reasons convince you, do one thing. If you appreciate this show and you want to thank us, you can try their tool. That lets them know that they have listeners, that we have listeners on this show that appreciate what they hear, and they'll continue to sponsor us. So if we're important to you, please do it for that reason, and we thank you for that.
Okay, thanks, Chris. So go ahead and open up your browser a little larger here, Chris. Yep, and yep. I want to show you, I've been running, so a client asked for like a year-end review, and so I did a little year-end review report for them. And I just got a screenshot here for you of the campaign page. So I don't want to talk about what states are named. You don't even know what industry it is.
No.
But it's a search campaign. They offer service. It's a high value service. And what I, you know, they were asking me to review it. I was like, we've made perfection, you know? And obviously I'm being a little facetious there, but like, I really was impressed with what we've done over the last year. Cause we've had this account for, I think it's our second year running it, but I think we got it kind of at the end of 2020, the last quarter. So I don't know. I just like what we've done with it. It's very organized. I'll walk you through it here. And if there's anything that you disagree with or anything you think I'm missing, please, you know, judge harsh here because I'm calling it the perfect account. And so be honest here. But what we've done is they run in one, two, three, four different states. We've got four search campaigns, one for each state. Break it up because each state has their own budget. That's a reason to break it up. At the same time, we've kept it simple. And we've kept it to the campaign level for the state at the state level. We got a brand campaign that runs in all these states, and we got a remarketing campaign that runs in all these states. You see here a few of the campaigns are limited by budget. That's okay. You know, we're running the budget we're comfortable with. I hope people can respect this. On the four search campaigns, the brand click-through rate is 34%, but on the four state search campaigns where people are searching for the service, we've got click-through rates that are essentially that some are 9 point something, some are 10 point something, but essentially 10%. And the time we show up number one is about 40 to 60%. Some one is in the 70s. So is that not impressive that we're showing up number one only half the time, which means we're bidding low enough to get a lot of clicks, but we're still bidding high enough to get clicks, being number one half the time, and we're coming in with what I think is a very impressive 10% click-through rate. Do you judge that as a good click-through rate?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I assume that's Google only, not the search partners, I assume, considering your limitations by budget. So I assume you only on Google. And I mean, looking at what you have here, it's, And let me describe what I see. I don't ever look at one individual number by itself. I always look at multiple numbers. So, I mean, if you guys want to understand how I see things, the first things I look at is I look at first conversions and what kind of conversions, you know, whether there's a significant number of conversions. Yes, there is. There's, you know, 8%, 10% conversion rates. Which are great.
Excuse me. We have an 18% conversion rate in one of the campaigns on the search campaign. Okay. I don't want to be dinged by the remarketing campaign.
That one spent 5% of the total spend. Doesn't
count. On the 68 clicks, 10% of the clicks. On the flip side, I don't want to be taken away from the brand campaign that gets a higher conversion rate. I want my cake and I want to eat it too. Okay.
Yeah.
I want the brand conversion rate to mix into the overall, but I don't want the zero from the remarketing account.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, and then going from the conversions then, you know, looking at the...
But hold on. On conversion rate, about a 9, 10% conversion rate, call it a 9. What would you say to my client on a search campaign tracking all conversions? Would you say this guy sucks and I can get you a 55% conversion rate, no. A 99% conversion rate? What are you saying here, Chris? Or would you say, you know what? 9% is good if you're doing things right.
Yeah, no, I think that's excellent. I think, a 10% conversion rate is superior. I think, you know, I think there's a poor, average, great, and then let's call it superior. You know,
what's also high tough tier is level. Like some industries and some very, very small budgets that are focused on the deepest part of the funnels, you can get 20 to 25%.
Sure. Yeah.
Now, I guess it's about your goals, you know,
yeah,
also combining that with volume.
It's all relative, but, you know, assuming that this is, that's kind of the top end of the level, considering you've been managing it for a while. Yeah. You know, 10% is great. And then the only thing, you know, skipping the rest of this stuff, you know, click-through rates and CPCs, you know, those are all relative to the industry and competitors and things like that. The next thing I look at and what kind of blows me away, and I'm pretty confused about, is that how you can have an impression absolute top percentage of 53%, and I'm looking at the very top campaign right now, 53% absolute top.
Sure.
And then I see a search lost IS rank of 62%. So you're losing most of your traffic due to bids, yet you're ranking in first position at 53%. So the only thing that I am concerned about is that there's a mixing of the match types in this. I'm imagining that there's some exact, there's phrase, and there's broad, and the broad are spent very low, and some of the exact are spent very high, and that's what's causing this discrepancy in the search impression share numbers. That's really the only thing.
I don't think there's pure broad in there. I think there's a phrase match and exact match. That number doesn't alarm me, Chris. I always look at the law student rank and law student budget as secondary numbers to make decisions on. And then primarily, if we have it in place, the conversions and the cost per click and that kind of stuff. I get what you're saying in the sense, though, it's weird, isn't it? That like you can not be showing up over half the time, but when you do show up, you show up half the time, number one. Which is strange.
It makes me think you might have a device. There's something in there that I can't see. There might be a device bid at 70%. There might be some broad keywords that are generating a lot of impressions, but ranking very low.
Another campaign down there. Number one, 78% of the time, lost you to rank 8%.
Right.
So, which looks a lot more normal. Very weird. Yeah. And then one thing I wanted to point out to you, look at my bid strategy types. I've got manual. I've got manual with enhance when it's been working for us. And then we had a problem in this one state. And so we threw on max conversions, target CPA, and we're getting a nice competitive cost per conversion and conversion rate from that state. And I'm happy with it. And so I like looking at my own work here. I like the flexibility to move from match type, depending on the results.
And that's,
or not match type,
bid strategy,
bid type,
bid strategy, bid type to bid strategy. Yeah. And what's surprising to me, for something like this is that you have 14 conversions in a 30-day time period, yet the maximized conversion target ROAS, no, target CPA, sorry, target CPA maximized conversion bidding that you have, and you only have 14 conversions, and it seems to be running pretty well.
My belief in terms of why that's working is because it's a long-term campaign.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, at least, 12 to 15 months at least of data. Chris, the thing I loved about just doing the year-end review for this account, you know, it's a couple $1,000 a month budget, but I like that it's broken down enough where we have state campaigns, and if something's not working in one state with manual bids, we can try something like maximize conversions bidding, target CPA. I like how each state can have its own budget, but I like that we kept it simple with brand and remarketing and applied those to all states, just one campaign for each of those. And I just thought maybe my use of columns, my use of campaigns, it just struck me as simple beauty. The simplicity here was beautiful. And it allows the decision makers going into the account managing it to do things like you just did and go, yeah, okay, it's great. You know, nice 9% conversion rate. You're happy with your cost per lead. How can we make it better? And an expert like you very quickly was able to go, oh, that's weird. That much losing due to ad rank and you're still showing up number one. I think there's probably room for some kind of investigation there. Maybe we can find some way to improve that's really interesting there. Because things are simple, you were able to zero in on something that stood out.
That's a good point.
And we can go figure out something.
If you would have shown me a different account that was, okay, here's a screenshot of 50 campaigns.
It would have taken you 30 minutes to even figure out what's going on.
I wouldn't have even tried. I said, well, it looks like you have a very specific goal in mind, apparently, because I'd kind of BS around everything because in the end, you wouldn't be able to tell anything. So that's a good point. I mean, people can't see it, but I mean, there's a handful, four search campaigns. There's a brand campaign and a remarketing campaign. That's what we mean by simplicity. And it's targeted by each of the search campaigns are targeted by state. You know, that's something you can look at, see what's happening and understand it immediately. And I love it. That's what I love to see. That's what my campaigns look like as well.
And Chris, to be humble and to be fair, there are things we can improve on. So we did a year-end review, and because things are simple and because they're working overall, we could go on hunches. And one of the hunches I had when I looked at the search terms, even though we weren't targeting the keywords that include the word this service plus the word cost, we're still getting a lot of our traffic from cost related searches and search terms from our keywords that don't include that. Now, that could be different in the last 6 months due to the updated phrase match and why we're getting that. But I was able to filter the search terms again. This is an example of doing this. Search term includes the word. Then I put the as the idea here, and then I put the word cost in there. And I don't think you'll be surprised by this, but cost is difficult because cost brings in volume conversions, but they're definitely lower converting and cost more than keywords that don't include the word cost. And so I presented it to the client. I didn't make a decision for them. I presented them the data. I said, you know, hey, we are getting, I think it was like 15% or so of our conversions from search terms that include the word cost. We've never really made a decision whether what or not we want to target that yet because we don't have those in keywords. What do you want to do? Do you want to lose 15% of your conversions and add it as a negative? Or do you want us to start adding it as a keyword and controlling it with lower bids to account for the lower conversion rate? And so they'll make that decision. But if I told you my theory is that cost searches that include the word the service plus the word cost or price or fee or whatever it is, would you agree with me that those are perfect examples of middle funnel where some of the people might be interested in converting and buying and then some of the people definitely are not?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely a search I go after. I've met a lot of people that tend to block it because they think it's just people that are just shopping for the cheapest, but I don't think so. I think when you shop, price is one of the factors, and sometimes it's just hard to find. You can compare feature to feature, right? But sometimes it's hard to compare cost to cost, and they just want to get an idea of what cost is. So, yeah, I agree.
And then, by the way, they stumble across your website and realize, wow, that's actually the exact company or person I've been looking for.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, like, sure, what does it cost to work with them? But, wow, I really want to work with them. And then, boom, you get a conversion.
Yeah.
So, well, Chris,
yeah, I'm ready to go ahead. I'm excited to jump in to here because I think this is something we both agree on here, and this is something we talked about before. But biggest concern, biggest question we have moving into 2022.
So, Chris, we got punched in the mouth this year with the updated phrase, and we went back to our corners and our this podcast. We puffed each other back up, like, get back out there and keep fighting, Rocky. And we did, and we figured out how to handle the updated phrase match change, biggest change of the year. But now we have a new thing coming in 2022, and at some point, I think in June maybe, we're going to lose the ability to create new expanded text ads, something that we've all gotten so used to, and we're now going to have to, essentially, if you want new ads, you're going to have to be making responsive ads. We have our worries about that, and so now we're back in the corner again, and we're going to try to pep each other back up to get back out there in the ring. In the squared circle here, Chris, and dominate some Google Ads campaigns. So, why are you concerned about? Why are responsive ads your biggest concern or question mark for the year? Just like they are mine. Why is this top of mind for you?
What? And you know, this is one of the. I mean, the whole topic of the discussion here is that, you know, the biggest wins, the biggest most important things of 2021, and one of the things that really has been on top of my mind is just how bad the responsive ads are at simulating like human writing. They are so heavy on the robot optimization side. They're like if you gave an SEO person, you know, 8, maybe 15 different headlines, and they're like, hey, just come up with something that, you know, would work well for SEO. What they'll do is they'll pick plumber near me as the two headlines, you know, and then maybe the third headline, plumber near you is the third one. And you're like, what are you doing? There's a whole like, other.
We're using your keywords, buddy. Yeah. What do you think we're doing?
Why are you doing this? Why have you trended so heavy towards the factor that, you know, so weights towards Google and so lightly trends towards just, you know, human reading and comprehension? You know, there's a certain amount of comprehension and understanding when it comes to writing these ads. I mean, I'm going to want to tell somebody why I'm different. You know, that's what Google says all the time. Stand out. You know, make something that is clickable. Make it appeal to the person. Tell them why your ad is going to solve their problem. Right? Yeah. And creativity is very important. And then I do all this creativity, and I might throw a couple just simple ones in there, and then Google picks the absolute least creative ones, and it blows my mind. And the problem is you will never detect it unless you look at the asset details of that responsive ad and see what those headline combinations are. And once you do, you'll realize the same thing I did. There's no fooling around with this. I just delete the headline. I say, that's it. You screwed up. You showed 50% of my impressions with this really crappy headline. I delete the headline and force it to recalculate and come up with.
So if you've got some awesome headlines in there that differentiate your advertiser, in business since 1990, over 1,000 Dallas area families served or whatever.
Yeah.
Stuff that stands out, and you know you're going to do stuff, or we can come out and, or I don't know. Fix your toilet tonight in Plano.
You know, it's like speed, convenience, pricing.
You're going to solve their problem. And then you also put in a couple generic ones like get a free quote now or right. Plano plumbing services.
Right.
And you're saying those start showing a ton and you get frustrated by that because you're like, maybe my click-through rate's high because I'm matching the search, but I don't know if those people are going to convert as high rate as the people that are going to see my ad. Mm-hmm. Fix my toilet tonight and go, that's what I need. I'm clicking and I'm calling right now, and you're losing the ability to control that. So yeah. You just delete those ones you end up not liking.
And imagine, I mean, let's take it to the extreme. Let's turn the volume up on, imagine Google got more and more.
I like when you take it to the extreme.
when they go, imagine Google's more and more on what they want. Imagine all this automation happens on a large scale. Imagine what the experience would be for the end user. When you do a search for plumbers, you're just going to get lots of headlines that say plumber, 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 plumber over and over. There's nothing unique. There's nothing to tell you. You
know what's weird? What I'm seeing a lot, I don't know if it's a responsive ad thing or not. I'm seeing a lot of headline ones that are the brand name.
Yeah.
And then right next to that, get a free quote.
Yep.
Brand name, get
which
a quote.
Which is useless.
Brand name, get a quote.
Useless.
It does, you can't differentiate yourself.
Yeah. There, I mean, just if it says Bob's Plumbing or, you know, Charlotte's Plumbing, I'm like, well, I don't care what your stupid name is. Tell me where you're located. Tell me what makes you different. Tell me, you know, if you're open today. Tell me if
I guess some people would push back and say, well, you can do all that in the description.
Oh
lines.
Yeah,
but we all know that the blue headlines are kind of where the eye action is and what attract people. So yeah, that's kind of been my problem as well, Chris. Is I have different types of headlines. I have headlines that have nothing to do with the keyword that differentiate the business, and then I have to feed the machine and all that kind of stuff. I have some headlines that use the keyword, and then I have some classic headlines that are calls to action, not too exciting, but like get a free quote now. I want people to want to catch their attention. Then I want to get them to step two, give them a reason to go to our website. My problem is I'm worried about them using those headline twos that I would use traditionally, get a free quote now, call us right now, call us today, whatever. I don't want those to be in headline one because that doesn't catch the eye. And so I guess I've had the thought like maybe I'll try pinning and I'll pin the stuff I would want as headline two to headline two and three. But at the same time, where I'm worried and why it's top of mind here going to 2022, I don't know if pinning goes against the mindset or the algorithm of the responsive ads, and then they say, hey, you're not letting us do our combinations and whatever. So I'm at the point where I'm still trying to figure it out.
Here's where you'll end up, because I've been down that road. Let me know if you don't end up here, but here's where I ended up. Here's the feature I want. I want my pin to be essentially the inverse of a pin. I want to be able to say, don't show this headline one. Don't show this headline
that's
two.
Is where I've ended up, because I'm like, well, should I pin it to headline two or three? I don't know the difference between those. They both seem like good spots for this.
I'd rather have a multiple choice and say either headline two or three, but not one, or headline one, but not three. You know,
I mean, maybe we're spitballing here. Maybe it comes down to just pinning stuff you want in headline one and giving the system that information. But that's the, like, your interesting stuff about your business that would attract the eye. Maybe you just pin those to headline one and see if they run more. But that's definitely the confusing, frustrating aspect of this change. And another kind of frustrating thing is the grader, whether it tells you have an excellent ad if you use the keywords, and then if you try to make a human ad that like will attract attention and differentiate your business, you're using less keyword in the headlines, yeah. and all of a sudden your score goes down to poor, and you don't know, does that, is that just input or feedback, or does that actually mean you're going to show me less, or does that mean my ad rank is going to be lower and I'm going to have to pay more? Mm-hmm. These are all questions that at least I have going into the new year, and I guess we have 6 months to figure it out, but I guess I want more data. I want more knowledge about this ad format that is going to be the dominant format.
The whole thing's the whole thing is handicapped. The whole thing's crippled, and it's not giving me what I need. I mean, we could do a whole topic on that, but we're ending positive. We're ending 2021 with things that worked, things we loved. We'll keep with that tone. We'll save the gripes for maybe next year.
For sure, Chris. And just as our little call to action, our plug here at the end of the show, instead of doing individuals today, I figured we'd kind of do a shared show one. We're going to be doing a lot of things going into the new year, probably going to be back on YouTube, on the YouTube channel, going to do a lot more stuff on social media. We've got news about our Facebook coming up in the new year, a lot of different things, and the show is definitely going to be a lot easier to share because you're going to have those YouTube links, you're going to have social media, stuff like that. All we ask is you just share the show. Both of us hear from people every week who are just finding the show for the first time and then binging, and that's very motivating to hear that there's still a lot of listeners out there that we can reach. So that's our only call to action is we share a lot on the show year round, and because of that I think we got a good thing going, and all we ask in return is that you just give the show a little bit of a share and a boost here in 2022. So we appreciate that. We will be back in the new year, two guys, 2022. Two places you can find the show now, YouTube and audio. And I've gone on for too long.
Jason, take us out in Spanish.
Adios, amigos.